And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today,
today is
Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. You can go up and see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They have everything you ever wanted to see in John Deere. They got tractors, attachments, they got mowers, they got it all. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Well, let's see. Today is February 7th. I do have an announcement for next week. Heard from our friend Dr. Lyle Rapacki that he's going to come on and give us the next the update on what's happening with the Arizona voter fraud investigations, and I guess that's really heating up. Let's see, the fastest way for me to give you current information would be if you go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Go there, go to the February 14th show, and I have his E. Prescott News link on there, and he's posting videos like, I don't know, a lot, daily, sometimes a couple times a day, on what's happening. And I don't think it'll spoiler alert anything, because I'm sure by next week there will be a lot more. So, for those of you who've been waiting for the next installment is coming. I don't know. Today, it was actually last week, I got a hold of Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and because I made the mistake of watching a White House briefing, and, you know, they're going on and on and on about how global warming is the greatest, you know, national security threat we face. And
existential threat. get it right.
It's funny. Was that a Freudian slip? Did you say existential threat?
Yeah. at least I didn't incite an erection, so, you know. Yeah,
that's true. but all the Democrats did.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Anyway, they've decided that, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, China or Russia or EMPs or, you know, any actual real nuclear armaments. I don't know. List goes on. But now we're going to sweat about the, you know, climate change situation. And I don't know. Part of me is kind of happy because they're just going to wander around like they did during the Obama administration, pat each other on the back and, you know, fly private planes to Davos. And
don't forget, we'll get a hold of James Taylor again and get
James Taylor over there to sing
us a tune. Sing Jimmy.
But at like basically the same time, Dr. Pry put out an article about the Russia EMP threat, and I thought, huh, that's an actual thing. Maybe we should talk about it so the world could remember that, you know, climate change really isn't our greatest threat. And we have had this is like our 15th show with Dr. Pry, which is pretty fun since back in 2017. And we love having him on because he's full of information. He is the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum, just in case he thought, you know, he was just going to be making this stuff up. Both of those are congressional advisory boards. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, hence the topic today. He has a PhD in history, another one in archaeology, history in archaeology, and another one in strategic studies, which is what led him to the CIA. He's also the author of numerous books, including The Power and Light, The Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America from 2001 to 2020, Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, and Electric Armageddon. So they're kind of fun topics, and there's a whole bunch more, and I've listed them actually on the page for today. And today, just for the record, would be February 7th, 2021, in case we, you know, play the skin at another time, because most of these things are not necessarily time-sensitive. But anyway, that's the announcement portion of the program.
There you go. You did well.
I will now stop talking. So how was your snowstorm, Dr. Pry, over there in your global warming of Virginia?
Well, last week it was nice to have, because we so rarely get snow here. And so we had some snow last week, and you know, enough so that it constituted a snow emergency in Virginia, which means that if you get more than 3 inches of snow on the ground, it's a snow emergency, you know, because basically most of localities and the Washington, D.C. area aren't prepared to cope with that amount of snow. And
We had snow the week before, and we had like 300 car accidents here in our town.
And then today we're going to be 70, 75. So
figure it out.
And it all melted away by Friday, but then this Sunday morning we got snow again.
Oh. You know?
So I always like to see some snow. I was raised in upstate New York, which is the snow belt, and you can get 2 feet of snow in a day. And so it was nice to see some snow.
Yeah, I was a kid in Connecticut, and we would have had no money if it wasn't for the snow and the leaves.
And since we started off talking about the weather, and I know you wanted to talk about climate change.
Well,
you
not
know,
really, but yeah.
Maybe we should start off talking about that.
Sure.
Because it is a pet peeve of mine. And, you know, one of my frustrations with President Trump was that while he understood that, you know, the climate change was a hoax, and on occasion, on a rare occasion, said so, he didn't say that often enough and didn't really use his administration to make the scientific case against climate change. And now it can be told, I understand, you know, from inside sources, the reason for that is that Ivanka is a climate change believer, or at least so I was told.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, to make her happy, to keep her happy, he didn't go in that direction. So that's unfortunate, you know, because the democracy is based on facts. And Republicans, only President Trump had the courage even to go as far as he did. You know, most Republicans don't have any courage at all. And they've been letting the Democrats get away with murder by implying that, I mean, the Republican argument is basically that, oh, it's too expensive to deal with climate change. You know, we have to think of other higher priority things like jobs and the like. And most people will agree and understand that. And even if you're going to argue that point of view, that alone is sufficient to overturn the draconian policies that the Democrats want to follow to pursue climate change. But the better argument is to attack them on the science, you know, because the Republican position always seems to concede the idea that climate change is real, that we really face some kind of crisis, and it leaves a false impression out there among the base, conservative people that there is something to be worried about there, and there isn't. There's no scientific basis for the idea that the Democrats was constantly that they won the presidency on that in 12 years, you know, we're going to face some kind of a climate crisis if we don't arrest carbon footprints now and revert, you know, to clean green energies that produce no carbon. That's simply not true. The only tiny shred of truth there is in their argument is, you know, that if you go back, that there is a slight warming. There has been a slight warming, but it's well within the norms of the kinds of fluctuations that happen with climate. And normally, warming is actually associated historically with good times. You know, if you go back in the record, for example, you know, there was a warming period when the Vikings were able to settle Iceland and Greenland, and they had bigger populations. You could actually do farming in Greenland at the time. You know, the Renaissance was a period of great productivity because there were more crops. But North American Indian tribes flourished, you know, during, these warming periods, all right? But it's not a catastrophic warming period, you know, where the poles are going to melt and the seas are going to rise, which doesn't even make any sense scientifically, and you can prove it to yourself with the ice cube experiment. You know, most of the water that's supposed to result from is the melting of the Arctic caps, okay? And the Arctic, the North Pole polar cap, because there's no land mass up there, it's floating on the sea, okay? And when ice is created, it has a larger volume and a lesser mass because it expands. Ice expands. It's one of the few things that expands instead of shrinking when it reaches freezing point. And because it expands, it actually has less mass than liquid water. you know. So if the North Pole, all of the Arctic Sea ice melted, it would have zero difference in terms of raising the sea levels. And you can prove this to yourself by putting an ice cube in a glass of water and drawing a line about where the water is, and then checking back after the ice cube is melted to see if the water level has risen. And you will find the water level is exactly the same, you know, because the amount of the volume that is displaced by the ice cube when it is floating in water, all right, it represents the amount of water that's going to be left in the glass when the entire ice cube melts.
I like it when there's like practical things like that that people can do. We have to take a really quick break, not because we have to run and get the ice cubes, although I really wish we had some because then I would go do it right now. But got to celebrate a little free market while we still have it here in Northern California, while we're still under the tyranny of Gavin Newsom. And hey, if you haven't done it already, go to recallgavin2020.com, print out the petition, and sign the recall. And then make sure you turn it in. That would be pivotal. You can't sign it online. You got to print it and turn it in. But they give you lots of places to do it. So if you're in California, jump in on the recall. It's going well. It's going so well, Gavin Newsom's worried about it. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
What shall we do about them? They move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
There we go. And we were having a little hate and discontent during the break there. Couldn't decide if I said 2020 or not. So it's recallgavin2020.com, just in case I left off the 2020, because that's kind of important. So recallgavin, G-A-V-I-N, 2020.com, if you live in California and you're listening to this before March the, I think it's 15th or so when it's up. Super important and really important to turn it into a collection site that's listed on that website, so the Secretary of State can't cook the books. Yeah. Not that that would ever happen in California.
Not in California.
No.
And they're pretty close to their goal, but they do need more help. So if you haven't, get out there and do it.
There's only five signing spots on a sheet, so sign it and find four other people. It's not that tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, that commercial message is over. I like the ice cube experiment. That's an easy one, and that's something anybody can do at home to basically kind of debunk the foolishness.
Well, unfortunately, President Biden hasn't conducted the experiment, and he is right about this. The president is right about this, and the Democrats are right that climate change poses an existential threat to our society. But it's because it's fake science, and they are engaged in policies that will pose an existential threat to our society in response to the non-threat that is climate change. During the break, an article just popped up on my screen here about Biden directs military to make climate change central to American national security. And they're quoting the new Secretary of Defense, Mr. Austin, Secretary of Defense Austin. I'm quoting him. Every year we see the consequences of increasing incidents of flooding, drought, wildfires, and extreme weather events on our installations at home. Every year our commanders and their allies and partners conduct operations that result from instability in society strained by desertification, the threat of adversary access to homelands through the Arctic, and demands for humanitarian assistance worldwide. We know firsthand the risk that climate change poses to national security because it affects the work we do every day. And that is just totally false. And Biden has directed his Secretary of Defense to place this non-existent threat at the center of our national security policy. And doing that does pose an existential threat. It's taking up enormously scarce resources, resources that we should be putting into the modernization of our nuclear weapons, upgrading our military critical infrastructures to be protected against super EMP weapons, protecting our civilian critical infrastructures from EMP, deploying space-based missile defenses, you know, all of these things, in an economy, because the economy is still tanking from the misguided responses to the COVID crisis. Defense dollars, defense budgets are going to be at best flat in the future. They're probably going to decrease as the Biden administration starts implementing its radical social and climate change policies, and that's going to eat into the scarce defense dollars to protect us from our adversaries. It has already had a really destructive effect on the NATO alliance, the climate change myth. People were always criticizing President Trump for taking the perfectly reasonable position that the NATO alliance should be paying its fair share of its own defense. Mm-hmm. People were saying, oh, that's going to endanger the NATO alliance. Obviously, it didn't endanger the NATO alliance, but it increased NATO's own defense spending by billions of dollars, something the Russians surely hated. But, you know, climate change canceled the effects of a lot of that, because one of the things people don't understand is why you may recall that President Trump was also against Germany building the Baltic natural gas pipeline to Russia, right? And the reason for that is because that was giving billions of dollars back to Russia that they could spend on their military. And it was also making the German energy systems, German electricity, and all their critical infrastructures dependent on Russia, so that Russia could turn off the heart of the European NATO alliance just by shutting off the natural gas pipelines. Why would Germany do such a suicidal thing? Why would they do it? The reason they had to do it, or the reason they did it, is because they believe in climate change. And they shut down all their nuclear reactors, in compliance with climate change, because they thought the nuclear reactors, and their coal-fired electric power plants as well, they saw these things as having too big a carbon footprint, and they were even though the nuclear reactors actually have the lowest carbon footprint of ever anything except hydroelectric stations, nonetheless, if it's nuclear, the green left hates it, and so they had to be shut down too. And Germany was getting most of its electricity from those sources, and so to make up for what they did to themselves as part of their climate change policy, Germany had to turn to Russia to get natural gas, which ironically does have a carbon footprint. So you can point. There's a clear and present danger from climate change right there. In the heart of the NATO alliance. Germany, which is close to being a frontline state, used to be a frontline state, but it's right behind Poland and the Czech Republic. The Fulda Gap is there. That's where the tanks are going to be rolling. And they have made themselves vulnerable. And President Trump saw that, because of this climate change fiction. The other thing is, all through our military, and the Republicans tolerated this, and they put up with this, even when they had dominated, when we had control of both houses of Congress and the White House, they didn't do anything to roll back and stop all these ridiculous, expensive reports, and scientific research, and to seek, for example, they were trying to find green ways of powering naval ships, and finding alternative fuels for naval ships that would have driven up the cost of powering an air, of powering the Navy and the Marines and the Army, you know, a thousandfold, you know, versus using. And all of this stuff is crippling our military and extremely costly, and we can't afford it. And in terms of the political process, you know, now once the Democrats took over the House, you know, we now actually have a climate change committee. There's a whole committee of Congress dedicated to climate change. So it's organic in the policy process. And, you know, and all of it is a fiction. So the argument that climate change is an existential threat to our country actually is true, but not because climate change is true. You know, it's because, you know, when you engage in such draconian, self-defeating, suicidal responses to something that isn't real, I mean, this is the problem. This is the kind of self-defeating, self-destructive consequences of a society that's not rational anymore, or at least political leadership that isn't rational and doesn't think logically and doesn't believe in facts. It's like what happens in 1984, right? You know, when you build public policy around a fiction, like the idea that there aren't two biological sexes, but really it's the 26 genders that matter. Same thing here, and it's, you know, this belief in hocus pocus and made up phony fictional things. It's really a religion, a secular religion that is fundamental, and it wouldn't be a bad thing if the secular religion were mostly grounded in truth, but it isn't. It's grounded
or they would nothing. Just they would just own up to it that it's a religion and stop inflicting it on public policy.
Right, and because it is inflicted on public policy, it's dragging all the rest of us down the drain with it. Mm-hmm. But I'll just wrap up the climate change discussion if we can, or unless
sure.
you want to continue it with, because I'd like to give the audience a couple of places to go to get real information on climate. One of them is a website called realclimatescience.org, realclimatescience.org, and there you will find most real climate scientists actually don't subscribe to the hysterical theories of the left. It is a lie that there's some kind of a consensus among climate scientists, you know, that that the global warming poses a catastrophic threat to the United States or to the world. And you will also discover that the so-called UN experts aren't experts at all, but they're actually lobbyists for Greenpeace and and Save the Earth and Save the Whales and the Natural Defense Resource Council and all these, you know, green environmental activist groups. You will find that they are so extreme that some of the people that founded some of these organizations are actually turned against them. Another excellent source, if you had to buy one book, you know, if anybody is interested in reading the truth about climate change, there's a great book written by a scientist named Gregory Wrightstone. Gregory Wrightstone. It's called Inconvenient Facts, the Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Inconvenient Facts by Gregory Wrightstone. And it's a short book, but it will, and it has a lot of, it's got a lot of, you know, in-depth technical science, but it also has just a lot of common sense proofs, too. Basic facts. That, for example, that the polar bears are not on the verge of extinction. The polar bear population is actually larger than it has ever been, as is the case for all. In fact, it is so large we're not even sure how many of them there are now. That the moose and other Arctic wildlife, you know, they've never been more prosperous. The ice caps are not shrinking.
That is inconvenient.
Yeah, even though the you know, much was made about this enormous iceberg that sheared off Antarctica last year, a couple of years ago. But actually, the Arctic ice sheet is actually increasing in size, and the net ice, the net amount of fresh water locked up in the ice caps basically really hasn't changed significantly. The glaciers are not melting all over the world.
Oh, and the we learned from the guy that started Greenpeace that left them because they were too crazy when they wanted to ban chlorine, and he's like, "Oh, okay, I'm out." But he went on a tirade. Let's see, we had Dr. Moore on back in 2019, and he was telling us about the whole thing with the coral reefs are being bleached and all that, and that's all BS too. We've got to come right back here. We've got to take a quick break. I'm going to link that book, Gregory Wrightstone, Wrightstone, and apparently it was number one on Amazon for a period of time. I bet that was painful for them. So our guest today is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
it wouldn't be 20 below,
it wouldn't be 20 below.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
I wouldn't be shoveling snow,
I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming.
I hate it when I get slighted by science. That's just so irritating.
So inconvenient. Hey, Gregory Wrightstone, just a little FYI here. I did a little quick look during the break. And inconvenientfacts.xyz is his website. He's got the book on there, and he also has a newsletter. And he's got an inconvenient app, which I'm sure is more convenient than the title. But he's got the inconvenient app. I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to become a groupie. He's got a blog, interviews, videos, climate chronicles. We need to get him on here. It sounds like that would be tons of fun. And, hey, just before we leave the global warming thing, we had a guy on a long time ago. I mean, like probably 9 years ago now. And I never forgot it because he was talking about the CO2. He was like a really just a regular guy. He was tons of fun. And came on and he said, you know, let me tell you about CO2. He goes, you know, in the air, or just all around where we breathe, it's like 400 parts per million. He goes, you know, when you do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on somebody and you breathe into them, that's 40,000 parts per million. So if you're...
But how's it bring them back to life?
Exactly. So if it's toxic, I mean, if it's you know, poisonous or whatever, harmful, those people should have all died. And yet that was a perfectly acceptable, first aid treatment for many, many, many years. So there's a lot of this that's super inconvenient, and it's nice to point that out.
Well, CO2 is also plant food.
Well,
and
yes.
So you need it for plants, which generate oxygen to thrive. But moving on from global warming, let's talk about a real existential threat.
Yes.
You know, my EMP task force, we've put out a new report on titled Russia EMP Threat. And this is really the greatest threat to our civilization that we face right now, the greatest man-made threat, I think the greatest natural threat as well, since the sun can make an EMP that can destroy electric grids and all the life-sustaining critical infrastructures basically everywhere in the world, and putting billions of lives at risk. A primitive nation like Iran or North Korea or even terrorists, if they could get hold their hand on a nuclear weapon and loft it even in something as primitive as a weather balloon and get it up above 30 kilometers so that they could make an EMP attack over the eastern grid of the United States, if they could just do that, you know, primitive nuclear weapon lofted in a weather balloon 30 kilometers high, you know, it could black out the eastern electric grid, you know, for a year. And that alone would be enough to end us as a civilization, because most of the population of the United States lives on the eastern grid. 75% of our electricity is generated by the eastern grid. The western grid, you out in California, even though your grid might still be intact, you know, it would be like Rome being invaded by the barbarians, because people would be moving to trying to get to California, to Texas. Your scarce resources would be used trying to revive the eastern half of the country, you know, it would be a it would be a chaotic situation. And this is the astonishing thing. I mean, one would think that, well, you know, Washington has to be hit in the head with a 2x4 to be woken up, right? Well, we know that it takes even more than that. You know, because what is not being talked about anymore? It had been the biggest story, you know, around the, just before the holidays, the solar winds so-called hack, the solar winds hack. You know, when it happened, in fact, I think I was on your show even to talk about that, you know, because it was the biggest story around, just like these cyber attacks, these large-scale cyber attacks, every time they happen, they're the biggest story around, because for a short while, even the idiots who believe in climate change understand that this is a real threat. And, you know, we have been hit over the years. The cyber attacks are escalating in their sophistication, in the depth of their coverage, and their potential damage they can do. You know, this last one, you know, the administration admitted that, you know, hundreds of departments and agencies of the U.S. government had been penetrated. Now it turns out, including the Department of Defense, but the departments and agencies most responsible for our national security, like our nuclear weapons labs, even the critical infrastructure, and even the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, which is supposed to be protecting us from cyber warfare, even they were penetrated deeply and didn't even know about it for at least 9 months. So the bad guys were wandering around in the halls, in the cyber halls of the U.S. government and in the private sector areas. Hundreds of defense contractors and our defense industries that make our strategic and conventional weapons were penetrated. And Washington, as always, tries to put a base face on this by saying, well, it wasn't an act of war, you know, because it was an intelligence operation. They were gathering intelligence. But they actually don't know the extent of the damage. They were at least, at minimum, gathering intelligence. You know, it's highly likely that they were also inserting logic bombs and viruses and cyber weapons inside of our critical infrastructures and inside of our government agencies' control and communication systems, so that if we get into a World War III, they could just shut everything down. That's part of this new way of warfare that the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Iranians, they call it total information warfare or cyber warfare or electronic warfare. They have a lot of different names for it, but it all comes down to the same thing. You know, a coordinated attack using cyber weapons, that's the tip of the spear, you know, followed by non-nuclear EMP weapons and physical sabotage, small groups of special forces teams running around shooting up transformers and control systems, and then the ultimate cyber weapon in their book, the ultimate cyber weapon, is a nuclear EMP attack. They don't consider that a nuclear attack in their military doctrine.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's considered a cyber attack or an electronic warfare attack or an information warfare attack, just like a cyber weapon is considered. They consider it in that gray area. And actually, in terms of the physics, they're right, you know, because as I've explained on this show before, you know, an EMP attack is not like a Hiroshima Nagasaki type attack, you know, that involves blast, thermal effects, and radiation, radioactive fallout to create human casualties. You know, the bomb is detonated in outer space, you know, a minimum of 30 kilometers overhead. Could be as high, if they're going to put a field over the whole United States, it would be an altitude of 300 kilometers. But whether it's at 30 kilometers or 300 kilometers, if you were standing on the ground directly beneath the explosion, you wouldn't even hear it go off because it's going off in the vacuum of space. And there would be no radioactive fallout reaching the ground, no blast would reach the ground, you know, nothing would reach the ground except the EMP, which would pass harmlessly through your body because it's a radio wave. It's super energetic radio wave, and it would only destroy the electronics. And that's why in the military doctrines of our adversaries is not considered a nuclear attack, because none of the effects that we associate with nuclear war happen. Just this EMP, which doesn't happen when you detonate a weapon inside the atmosphere or on the ground, by the way. This kind of EMP you have to detonate the weapon out in outer space in order for it to happen. And I can explain why, but that's a little bit complicated to show without a blackboard, but I could try to explain it, by radio if you're interested enough.
Well, tell me this. Can't believe it. Oops. It's 1:45. What the heck? What's happening? Are you time traveling us? Your snowstorm and talking about climate hoax. I don't know. Maybe it just gets me all jacked up. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's 1:45. We've got to take a really quick break and then we'll be right back. But, you know, let's not gloss over the fact that all of these things are real national security issues, although nobody seems to be talking about them. And maybe consider what people can do, writing to their representatives or calling or whatever, if there's any component of that seems to make sense. When we come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, you are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
So don't you late, act now, supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the maid, be out tomorrow. But if the offer's shunned, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Just out of curiosity, why do you think they want to rearrange all the foreign policy and make it about climate hoax rather than actual national security threats?
Well, I think it's a way of this has been part of the left's agenda for a long time.
That's true.
After the Soviet Union collapsed, socialism got a bad reputation for a long time. And a lot of the leaders of the left in the West became environmentalists and sort of changed their tune about justifying a great expansion of governmental power to get hold of the economy and control people's personal lives using environmental catastrophe as justification. When I was growing up, in fact, it was even going on during the 60s, before the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was this element in our Western society. The threat then wasn't global warming. It was the advent of a new ice age and or overpopulation. There was Paul Ehrlich's famous population bomb that published in the mid-60s, that predicted by the 1980s there would be cannibalism in the United States. President Nixon was written by the geology faculty, every member of the geology faculty in Brown University, you know, one of our Ivy League schools, wrote to Nixon warning that there would be a new ice age by the 1990s, and we basically needed to institute socialism and change our economic behavior, you know, because our industrial society and capitalism was basically responsible for bringing on the new ice age. So they've been using the environmental scare to try to justify socialism. And this is, now that socialism is back, they know it's not universally popular. And in addition to trying to re-educate us that freedom is evil, the free enterprise, free economic systems, and even, I guess, free political systems, that tolerate the views of people who listen to this radio show are basically evil, and that we need to be re-educated, we need to be woke, okay? But I think that they know that that's not enough, and so those people who can't be persuaded to socialism on its merits, need to be scared into it, by something like climate change. Every totalitarian movement has its boogeyman that it uses to do that. It was the evils of capitalism. Capitalism was the boogeyman, and the oppression of the masses, oppression of the common man and the working man. And they promised, that through class war and world revolution that eliminates capitalism, you could achieve a workers' paradise. For the Nazis, it was the international Jewish conspiracy that was the bane of mankind, and that by eliminating, the Jews and their allies, they could achieve an Aryan super race and purify the race and eliminate this noxious people, that were holding back, Germany's greatness, and were even responsible for Germany's defeat in World War I, according to the mythology. There's sort of a combination of these things in the modern, in the totalitarian movement that's sweeping through this country today, because that's what it is. It's a totalitarian movement. It's got all the earmarks of it, where they basically characterize their political adversaries as subhuman, as irrational, as not worth debating. We're now actually being defined as domestic violent extremists in the same camp as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. You don't reason with terrorists, do you? You reprogram them if you can, and if you can't, you eliminate them. So climate change is compared to what they're actually thinking about and talking about doing now, is relatively benign, compared to the agenda that seems to be incubating in Washington right now, this fiction. The short answer to that is justification of socialism, justification of a revolutionary transformation of our society that departs from all the tenets of the Constitution and the values of Judeo-Christian civilization. And in order to justify doing that to people, you need some kind of an existential threat to warrant, people changing, all of us changing fundamentally the way we think, the way we behave, the way we live, and what we believe in, and giving up on the idea that society should be organized, that the individual, the free-thinking, free person who can make his own decisions, that that's the basis of the society, and replacing that concept with the idea that the state is God, and that we all belong to each other, which sounds nice, but what it really means is that you're not an individual. You're part of a collective, and the collective they have for us basically isn't even a collective. Isn't even an egalitarian collective as it was in traditional socialism, but it's a stratified collective that has a caste system in it where white people are basically on the bottom.
That's primary.
The lowest caste of all, and it doesn't even help you. You can't even work your way out of it by becoming a big lefty. It's just in your genes. And those who are on the the white privileged people who are leftists and are going to learn this. Joe Biden is going to learn this eventually when they get full power, if these people are able to implement. It's got all the earmarks too, a totalitarian type movement, because it's already getting ready to eat its own children. Totalitarian movements tend to do that You know, they've got all of these disparate groups that have helped them gain power, just like happened in the Bolshevik Revolution, or like has happened during the French Revolution, as happened when the Nazis took over. You know, all of them ended up having purges internal to the party, you know, to eliminate and consolidate behind one small number of elites right up at the top to consolidate their power. Mao Zedong in China, Stalin in the Soviet Union, Hitler in Nazi Germany. You know, all of them had their night of the long lot knives where they eliminated these people. And but that's not something, you know, not that I'm looking forward to that, because they eliminate the decent people first. Well, the decent people get eliminated all through the whole process, you know. But that's my long-winded answer to your question about why do they believe in this fiction. Same reason they believe in all the other fictions, too, by the way. I mean,
just a tool.
Yeah, it's all in George Orwell's Animal Farm. And in 1984, you know, part of, you've got to, in order to control people, you've got to be able to be in control of reality. Put quotes around that, you know, you've got to end up convincing them not to believe their eyes and not to believe their own brains, but to believe what they're told, okay, even if it seems to violate all logic and common sense, you know. And that's really the sinister thing. It's not just, we consider it silly, the idea that, oh, you know, 26 genders versus two biological races, right?
Well, and they spent most of the Trump administration yammering on about Russia, Russia, Russia.
Right.
And but that, here but Russia is really actually a problem, and we're talking about polar bears, you know.
Yes, right. You know, but if we take one of their most, one of the things that seems most laughable to us, the idea that, oh, there's, you know, 26 genders, and you know, obviously anyone with a brain, you know, everybody with a brain who has been around as long as we have had governments across all of written human history, you know, public policy or religion, if you want to call it that, you know, going back, you know, to the agricultural, and across all civilizations too, public policy is based on the fact of two biological races, not based on concepts of gender, okay?
Well, gender isn't an idea. It's, yeah, it's a provable biological fact.
You know, but that's what you need to do. You need to convince people that if you can convince people that even that
oh, I forgot. It's the top of the
legitimate.
Hour. Oh,
okay.
This is the moment where we get cut off. We don't get to, sorry, we don't get to run over. I forgot. It's top of the hour. All right, so we have news. And unfortunately, we have news. So you've got that. You've got 5 minutes to go do what you need to do. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. You're listening to We the People at wethepeopleradio.us.